Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hey there, this is Live Creative Now, episode 6, and I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full-color creative life. This episode is sponsored by Creative Sandbox 101, the little e-course that sparks big transformation and has gotten over 1,000 people into their creative groove, or back into their creative groove, if they've lost it. The next session runs July 14th through 20th, and as a Live Creative Now listener, you can join me for just $10 by going to lcn.creativesandbox101.com. That's LCN as in Live Creative Now, so lcn.creativesandbox101.com. Today, I have a special live episode for you. Once a month, I host a special live call just for Live Creative Now listeners, where you can ask me anything you want about living a full-color creative life. I take the best questions from the call and edit them into podcast episodes. And in this session, which was recorded on May 7th, 2015, I answered questions about how to create when you're dealing with grief, how to keep creating when your family doesn't value what you do, how I learned all the techie stuff I do, and for passion pluralites, how to determine whether to keep specializing or follow your multi-passionate dreams. So let's get going with today's episode. Karen has a really powerful question. Do you have any experience working through grief? I haven't been able to do art for 2 months. Karen, I'm so sorry. Wow. Well, yes, I do have experience working through grief. I've had many, many moments of extreme grief in my life. The one thing that I know about working through grief is that it is completely individual. So what works for you may not be the same thing that works for other people. The one thing that I think is, or a thing that I think is really, really important and helpful when you're experiencing grief is to treat yourself so kindly and so lovingly. What you need most is self-compassion right now and giving yourself time. And often my experience with grief is that getting past it, getting through it so that I'm not immersed in this like heavy, heavy grief feeling takes me longer, has taken me in my life experience, has taken me longer than I wanted it to. I want it to be over like immediately. And it isn't. And that's really, really frustrating and really, really hard. It sounds like from your question that is a cause of pain for you that you haven't been able to do your art and that you really want to get back to doing your art. I have talked to some people about who were in similar situations with you, Karen, and sometimes the kind of art that we feel compelled to do when we're immersed in grief is different from the kind of art that we felt compelled to do before the grief. So that's one thing to look at. Is there some way that a creative expression experience would be a balm for your grief? Is there some way that you can modify your art, your creative expression, your pursuit of your creativity that would feel good to you in your place of grief? One thing also, when we're in grief, when we're in depression, often it feels like we don't want to do anything. And sometimes what can help is kind of pushing ourselves to do it even when we don't feel like it doesn't always help, but it can. And this is such an important place to practice my golden formula and to use that self-awareness plus self-compassion. Those really are the key to everything good. So if your self-awareness is telling you, I'm so hungry for my art, I feel such a need for my art, but I'm feeling in such resistance and so stuck or whatever, no, pay attention to that and tease out what the message is there for you. And it may be that the message is just pick up a brush and make one stroke and then notice how that feels and then react accordingly. Does that feel like you, does that give you the desire to make another stroke? Pay attention to that. It's a really important place to pay attention to your desires and really honor your desires. And also be aware that when you're in grief, when you're in depression, your desires are often somewhat very disconnected from your core, what you know in your heart you really want. Part of you wants to just lie on the couch and do nothing. And another part of you really wants to be painting in your studio or making your music or writing your poetry or whatever it is, right? So it's sort of a balancing act between those two things. There's this desire on the one hand, and there's this other desire on the other hand. This is where it's really important to use that self-awareness and try things and see how that makes you feel. And then always treat yourself with love and kindness and self-compassion. Really love yourself up as much as you can. So I hope that's helpful, Karen. Oh, here we go. Is that Elaine?
Hi, you can call me Janice. There's another Janice.
Hey, also. Janice.
Hi. I love your new art. It's so beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much. So Janice, did you have a question you wanted to ask?
Well, I'm multi-potentialite also, but I think what I do is now I've settled on the gourd art, but yeah. I get more satisfaction out of it because I can do several things with it, like the painting, the wood burning, the carving, inlay, and things like that. My problem, I think, is lack of discipline. I have a hard time sitting down to work, and I get a lot of resistance from the household regarding that because I feel like the wheat that falls into the weeds. If you know the proverb or the
is it your family is not valuing what you do, that they don't see it as worthwhile?
Yes. It's you need to get a 9-to-5 job, even though after taxes, the most I would make with my qualifications is like maybe $1,000 a month. And I keep telling them I have to do this. I mean, it's like air. I have to do it. I have to breathe. I'm slowly getting through it because I have a stubborn streak a mile wide. And if you tell me I can't do something, I fight to do it. But yes, yeah, I still, you know, smack you on the back of the head. Yeah, between the hunting dog and the husband, and, you know, I had a past of chronic illness. Now his father's dying, you know, all of this stuff going on. And it's like, oh gosh. But I'm 99% finished with a commission piece and I'm getting ready to work on some others. I've taken several classes, which have pretty much used up my budget. My nephew's helping me get up my website. So the first page is up, janicehillart.com, and it's WordPress. So I have a very hard time understanding that stuff because I'm so right-brained. But I'm determined to do it. It's just, I feel like I'm crawling along when I should be going at a faster pace.
Okay, Janice, oh my gosh, there's so much there to tackle.
I know, a lot of garbage.
No. I mean, this is, you're not the only one who's dealing with this kind of thing. This is big stuff. No, absolutely not. And it's so challenging when you live with people, the people who are most important in your life are not champions. That is so challenging. And I do not have, you know, a magic solution for turning them into champions. That is going to really depend on your relationship. It sounds like it's mostly your husband that's the issue. Is that right?
It's like when I was doing photography, I sold a piece for $800. And he went to work and someone told me, he went in and said, she made $800 on a photography piece in Taos. Can you believe someone paid $800 for a photo? Oh. So that's what I end up doing. If it's not directly related to what he wants specifically, then there's very little value in it. He went to visit his father before he passes, and they asked how come I wasn't with him, and he said, well, she didn't make enough gourd money to pay for a plane ticket.
That's really hard. So, I mean, that particular thing comes down to your relationship and negotiating that relationship with him. And, I mean, the thing that you have control over is being really clear about what is important for you. And I think you might have asked a question in a Facebook group or a chat, perhaps, or maybe it was somebody else who asked this question about how do I get other people to value what I do? And it starts with you valuing what you do. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you know that you need this, it's like breathing to you, is so, I mean, that you know that and you just stated it, that's huge, right? That's the first step, right? Is to know what's important to you and then communicating that. That is all you can do, right? You can let your husband know what's important to you, know what is supportive and what is helpful and what is, you know, what you would love from him. And you can let him know what is hurtful to you and what is not helping. And, you know, you can have those conversations with him. I don't have a magic pill that I can give you to give him to make him suddenly become 100% supportive. So that's really challenging.
Yeah, I suspect it as much. It doesn't help that he's an engineer. So,
yes. Yeah, a lot of engineers have a hard time seeing the...
They tend to border on autism.
Yeah. The other thing is, it sounds like money is a big value to him. So and I've seen your gourds. Your gourds are amazing. They're absolutely gorgeous. I could see your gourds as being, you know, highly prized, expensive collector's items. That's the kind of thing that, you know, you need to develop that sense of value and build up that audience of collectors. And, you know, I'm not the biz marketing guru. That's my partner, Corey Huff, who's, I mean, I do know some biz marketing, but that's not like my like big thing that fires me up. So he's the one to talk to you about, and you're already in his Art Empowers program, and I don't know if you're doing his other programs as well. But that, you know, I think that can be a really big value proposition for people who have a hard time supporting us when they see, oh yeah, it's actually bringing in some money. It may take him a while because, you know, if his response is, can you believe somebody paid $800 for that? He doesn't value what you do the way your collectors value what you do.
Well, I'm starting to find my collectors. I'm taking Corey's content marketing.
Great.
And I haven't been able to keep up with the classes because of everything that's going on. We're having a 3-day workshop coming up this on the 15th, and I'm going home to take care of some legal stuff for my family for 2 weeks right after that. But yes, I have a friend that says, you don't realize how good your work is. I mean, I know it's good, but I don't know how good. And I'm just starting with Corey's lessons, like finding my ideal client.
Well, I'll tell you something, Janice. I apologize for interrupting, but since we only have 10 minutes left, I want to get to the meat here. And the important thing really is, it's not about how good you think your work is. It's about how good your collectors think your work is. And that is about, so much of that is marketing and the story that you tell. And that's your positioning. That's your pricing. That's all of, if you're selling your gourds for $25, people are not going to value them more than $25. But if you're selling those gourds, and this is not something that you can necessarily do overnight, but if you're selling each gourd for $2,500, then people will value them at $2,500, right? So, and that's a whole other story, you know, a whole other conversation about pricing and how to get to that point of being able to command those kinds of prices. But all this is to say that as you build up your business and as you bring in more income, that will help, probably help your husband to be better at supporting you and championing you in doing your art.
Thank you. Hummingbird, even though it's partially a gift that I really need to give, I am getting paid for it, but I've been told that the retail price on it should be $3,000.
There you go.
Woo-hoo!
There you go. So yeah. Let me tell you something, Janice. When I started making ketubot, Jewish marriage contracts, the first one I did, I charged $700, which felt like this just huge amount of money to me. I felt like, oh my God, I've never made $700 on anything in my life. That piece took me 70 hours. That means I was making $10 an hour. And even back in 1996, that was not a living wage, especially in Silicon Valley. So I was making this amazing piece of art that I was undervaluing. You know, I was charging $10 an hour for. I don't even take commissions anymore practically. I mean, I would, but they'd have to be paid so much for them. The last ketubah I did, I think I got paid $4,500 for it. So that is a matter of deciding I am not doing this for a minimum wage anymore. I am doing this for a living wage. I can command this price. And that is mindset. That is, you have to work on that internal shift of valuing your own art. You have to work on that. It doesn't come automatically for most of us. Most of us have a tendency, some people overvalue their work. Most of us have a tendency to undervalue our work and therefore underprice it. And that is something that you have to consciously decide that you are going to battle against and make that and work on it. So that's your homework, is really to work on valuing your work.
I've been pushing on the value. And I've listened to you too about, does it make you upset if it's too high or too low? How do you feel about that? And I'm thinking with my core values, it's peace, connections, and spirituality. And I'm thinking of hitting some spas and seeing
if perfect. That's a perfect idea for you, Janice. You're so welcome. Let's see. Leanna asks, how did you learn how to do all of the internet marketing /email/ techie stuff? So the quick answer to that, Leanna, is one tiny baby step at a time. One tiny baby step at a time. That is how I learned how to do all that stuff. I figured out what the next thing was that I needed, that I felt like I needed. What do I need to know how to do in order to accomplish this one thing? And then I learned how to do that one thing. I wish I had snapshots. I could probably go in the Wayback Machine and find snapshots of my blog all the way back. My first blog was just some free dorky template, and all it was a blog. I did just like, boom, that was it. I've learned it all one tiny step at a time. That's the short answer. Let's see. Shannon asks, who is Corey Content Marketing? So Corey Huff is at theabundantartist.com, theabundantartist.com. And he is on my list of resources on my website. So I have a resources page that right now is open to the public, and you can just click on resources, and there's a whole bunch of cool resources in there, and Corey's one of them. Okay, let's see. So I have a question here that says, from Rochelle, it says, right now I am kind of pigeonholed as a jewelry designer, which is cool in one way because it means people like my jewelry, but it's not really how I see myself. I want to be an artist. I wonder if I should just accept this as what's happening for me right now and hope it evolves into more, or should I push through and actually live my multi-passionate dream? Is this just a lack of focus? Oh my goodness, Rochelle, this brings me back to 2010, almost exactly 5 years ago, when I was a ketubah artist who did jazz singing on the side. And I felt like that wasn't a big enough identity for me, but I couldn't figure out, what do I do with this? And then I had you can read all about it on Corey's blog, actually, at theabundantartist.com. I have a series of blog posts about my disastrous journey of building up an art business and then having it collapse with the economy. And I had a moment of crisis when I did a really stupid thing with a client and lost what would have been a very profitable job, and had basically a hit bottom moment, and realized that all these years of feeling like I wasn't really satisfied with what I was doing but I couldn't really figure out what to change about it because I felt like I had to be a ketubah artist and that was really my only option in life. All of a sudden, when you hit bottom, it makes you realize, oh, there's nowhere to go but up. I can do anything I want. So what do I want to do? So the first thing I would say to you, Rochelle, is to get really clear about what is it that you want. You want more than just being a jewelry artist. You want a jeweler, jewelry designer. You want to be an artist. What does that mean to you? Only you know that. Get really clear about what that means to you specifically. What are the things you want to be doing? If you could be doing anything, what would it be? If money wasn't an issue, what would you be doing, spending your time doing? These are really important things to know. Once you know all those things, then you can start to figure out how to incorporate them into your life. I wrote a blog post a number of years ago about how to live the life of your dreams right now. And Janice just typed in, know thyself. Yes, that's the self-awareness piece of my golden formula. Know yourself, know what works for you, know what doesn't work for you, know what you love, know what you don't love, know what you hate, know all those things. So I wrote this blog post a number of years ago, and how to live the life of your dreams right now. And I wrote it because at the time I was out singing periodically. I might have even had a steady gig at that point, I don't remember, as a jazz singer. I wasn't a touring jazz singer. I wasn't signed with a label, recording albums on a label, but I was a working jazz singer. And it made me so happy to realize that I got to do this thing that I'm really passionate about. I didn't have to be a full-time touring, signed with a label jazz singer in order to live this piece of that dream. I could get out there and sing in front of audiences. Was I doing it full-time? No. Was I making a bazillion dollars from it? Hell no. But I was doing it. I was doing the thing that I loved, right? So that's what anybody who has a question like Rochelle's, how do I, you know, this thing that I'm doing that I feel boxed in, this is not all of who I am. What do I do with that? Do I just accept it? You do not have to accept it. You get to determine what you want your life to look like. And it doesn't, I used to think that in order to be, have music in my life in a big way, I had to be a full-time music artist. And I didn't think I wanted to be a full-time music artist. Well, I didn't have to be a full-time music artist in order to have music in my life in a really big way. So whatever those other things are that you want to do, Rochelle, that to you mean being an artist, you can do those things. Start with doing them just a little bit every day if you can. And you will start to notice if you do something even a little bit every day, you are doing that thing. And when you are doing that thing, if you are making art every day, guess what? You're an artist. Do you have to make money from it in order to be an artist? No. Do you have to have a website in order to be an artist? No. All you need to do in order to be an artist and claim that for yourself is to make art. That's it. You want to be a writer? Write. If you write a little bit every day, guess what? You are a writer. You may not feel comfortable claiming that title for yourself, but it's the reality. A person who writes is a writer. So that's my answer to that question, Rochelle. Absolutely. I would say, for it's me, I am a multi-passionate, I'm a passion pluralite. So I would say push through and live your multi-passionate dream, and you get to figure out how to incorporate all those other things that you want to do into your life in a way that is sustainable and nourishes you rather than sucking you dry. That's the challenge. That's where my stovetop model can come in really handy. And guess what? We are at the top of the hour. Oh my gosh, that hour went by so fast. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and hopefully I'll see you next month. So that's it. That's a wrap of today's episode. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you're getting value out of this podcast, and I hope you are, I would absolutely love it if you would leave a review on iTunes. Ratings and reviews make a really big difference in how the show is ranked, and that makes a big difference in helping other people find it, and that helps grow the creative uprising. So you can play a really important role in this movement simply by leaving a review. Plus, I would be eternally grateful. Also, if you have a question about living a creative life, living a full color life that you'd like to hear me address on the show, type it into your review and you might just hear it featured on a future episode because yes, to incentivize you to leave a review, I prioritize questions that are left in reviews. Be sure to include your Twitter ID if you want me to give you a shout out if I use your question. And if you would like me to use your voice on the show, you can just go to the link to this episode in the show notes and you can leave me a voice message. But remember, I give first priority to questions left in reviews on iTunes. Thanks again for joining me, and until next time, go get creating. Mwah! Live creative now.